Okay, thank you again, Rabbi Hartstock. As I said, in a few weeks, Parshas Bereishis will be Rabbi Schachter. And once again, thank you very much. This is Parshas Vayelech.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming. I'd like Parshas Vayelech, what I'd like to focus on contains the last two of the Tayag Mitzvot. The psukim that you have here, Psukim Tet to Yud Bet, to Yud Gimel, is the mitzvah of Hakel. That's mitzvah 612. And then Pasuk Yud Tet is mitzvah 613. That's the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah. I want to start just by raising, by way of a question. I think that the general approach that I'd like to take to these two mitzvahs is actually to combine them together into one idea, even though they seem like they're very disparate in terms of Hakel happening, once every 7 years at the end of the Shemitah cycle. You don't exactly do it now. The idea of writing a Sefer Torah seems like something that's very different. But I'd like to focus on the kind of social value of these two mitzvot. I mean, it's not so much going to be about the kind of the parshanut and how it fits into the psukim, but why are these the last two mitzvot, and what does it mean, and what's the overarching idea that they're trying to convey when they are placed here in the Torah? It's specifically striking because Hakel doesn't seem to belong here at all. The idea of writing a Sefer Torah kind of makes sense. Somewhere towards the end of the Torah, they're going to write about that. The idea of gathering every 7 years after the Shemitah cycle, so it's, one of the Nechama Leibowitz shiurim has that as a guiding question. It's like, how do you respond to the question of why is this here? Why shouldn't Hakel really be either in kind of the Bahar area or in the Re'eh area where it talks about the mitzvah of Shemitah? And it's actually striking that it's not there, but it's here. And people give different kinds of parshanut types of answers, but what I'd like to suggest is that it is here specifically because it's next to the mitzvah of writing the Torah, and actually there's an idea that the Torah is concluding with here that makes it very important. So what I'd like to do is, first of all, just read through the psukim at first, and then what you have on the first side is what kind of one specific overarching idea that these two mitzvot are trying to convey. So the psukim say, "V'achtov Moshe et ha'Torah hazot v'yitnah l'kohanim b'nei Levi anosim et aron b'rit Hashem el kol zeknei Yisrael." This is the moment actually when Moshe writes down the Torah, and exactly there's a machloket in the Gemara as to what's been happening until now. Was it written parshiot, megillot, megillot? Was it written parshiot, one unit at a time, or was the whole thing written at the tail end? That's a machloket in the Gemara again. And the Gemara and the pasuk says, "Vayitzav Moshe otam leimor." And right here at this moment, right, highlighting that how that's striking, Moshe commands them, saying, "Miketz sheva shanim b'moed shnat hashmita b'chag haSukkot," that at the tail end of the Shemitah year, on Sukkot of that year, meaning the call it Sukkot of year number 8 or number 1, however you like to call it, when everybody gathers together, that's the mitzvah of Hakel. Right after he writes it, Moshe commands this mitzvah. Then a few psukim later, he says, "Vata, you should write out this shira and teach it to Bnei Israel, place it in their mouths, so that the Torah will be as a testimony, as witness between me and Bnei Israel." From which they derive, let's say from the word kitvu lachem, something like that, that it's not, it's Hashem tells Moshe kitvu lachem, it's not like tov lecha, kitvu lachem. You derive from there that everybody has an obligation to write a Sefer Torah. Now, the argument that I want to put forward is that these two mitzvot are put at the end of the Chumash, specifically in Parsha Vayelech, and are the last two mitzvot in the Torah for a particular social reason. So scholars of Tanakh note that in terms of the role that Torah plays, if you want to, we can gain meaning from the Torah by reading the Psukim and drawing meaning out of them, gain meaning of the Torah from seeing what the Psukim meant in the context of its surrounding nations at the time when the Torah was given. So we're going to do the latter for the moment. So Moshe Greenberg has a beautiful essay where he quotes the following two psukim from Parsha Yitro, where the pasuk says, famously, "Vata im shamoa tishmu bekoli ushmartem et briti v'item li segula mikol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz." If you listen to that which I command, you keep covenant, you will be a segula, you'll be a treasure from all the nations, ki li kol ha'aretz. Then pasuk vav, "Vatem tiyuli mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh." So we know that Hashem says that you'd be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So Moshe Greenberg writes, this phrase seems quite plain. Right? We quote it often as saying that Bnei Yisrael should be a mamlechet kohanim and a goy kadosh, and it seems like it's something which is clearly praiseworthy and lofty. But in its context, it actually means something very specific. What's the idea of being a mamlechet kohanim? Actually a kingdom of priests. The status of priests in any society, we assume there's a, you know, that every society has its kind of hierarchy. So the priests are the ones who are in the know, they're the ones who are closest to the sanctity. The idea of being a mamlechet kohanim is that there shouldn't be this kind of hierarchy, but the idea is that everyone should actually have that kind of raised status. It should be, each individual should matter the same degree that a priest matters in its nation for the Jewish people. Every Jewish person is supposed to matter on that level. So what's the it's a nice idea. What's the implication of such an idea? You could say that it's at, right. I mean, there are lots of jokes around about everybody's a president of the shul. You know, those jokes, I think, have a lot of meaning and actually are the joke form of what is a very serious idea that Judaism actually stands for, that this pasuk is actually trying to teach, which is then played out. Moshe Greenberg writes further, "Israel as a whole is to live in dedication to God after the manner of priests. Just as priests are to avoid pollution by unclean food, so are the Israelites at large. Just as the priests must avoid profanation through certain mourning customs, so must the Israelites at large." Actually picks these two kinds of examples because you can imagine the priests as being the people who have to worry about being kado, being tohor and tame. The priests are usually the people who have to care about that. When it comes to the Jewish people, the idea of this tzivui is everybody has to care about that. Everybody's considered to be a priest on that level. Now, we're not so interested in the moment in Tumah V'Tahara, but we are interested actually in the law, because as it turned out, the idea of saying that we are Amlechet Kohanim actually meant something very particular in terms of the relationship between the people and the law. And in order to, I kind of feel like when we're talking in our with our Jewish hats on, this is like an obvious statement, like all Jews are supposed to learn Torah. But we are so ingrained in it, sometimes it's like the thing that's closest to you, you don't necessarily look at and say, well, what's actually the idea that is behind that, that causes that to be such a central idea in Judaism? And sometimes when we look at what that idea is, we realize, oh, wow, this is something that's very powerful here. And the idea is that, just draw a comparison for a second to our own familiarity. I mean, think about law in other systems, in other societies, in the country within which we live. How familiar are we with the laws of our land? So we have, I assume that none of us have really read, some of us might know the laws of, some laws of the land better than others, where the laws reside. Like, if you want to know what the law is, where do you go? I mean, I'm saying you go to a lawyer, you go to a library. You can you go. I mean, it's like it's kind of. I mean, the point is to ask that question is to hesitate for a second. Like, I don't know because actually, I don't know exactly. I guess a lawyer knows the law. I guess there are what?
No, but there's so much law. There's like so many areas.
There's so much law in so many areas. Yeah, that's true. And how much have you ever read of any of that? I think the answer is, again, if you're an expert in an area, then you've read it. But otherwise, the law is located, really physically located, basically, in the space where the experts are focused on that, where they know that. So if you're going to be in a courtroom, If you're going to be in a place where the judge is sitting, so there'll be legal texts there. If you're going to be in a library, there're going to be texts there. Actually, that was the case in ancient societies as well. It's where, who knew the law? The king knew the law, and the priests knew their laws. Who had the connection to God? The priests had a connection to God, and kind of the hierarchies were kept very strongly. If you think about it in that context, there's a very, very important chidush that the Torah actually is teaching, which historians suggest was actually some form of chidush. You know, the ones who are more comfortable saying it, saying like, this is a real clear, it was a real chidush. I spoke to, as I was talking to Shalom Holtz about this last week, he said like, I always get a little like anxious, I get a little, you know, not so comfortable with this Jewish supremacy kinds of things, like where we discovered all the great ideas in the world. But there does seem to be something to this, which is the idea of you being on Amlachat Kohanim, Vigoy Kadosh, means that everybody needs to know the law. And I know that we make distinctions because we think about this as religious law and it's different for all the... The reason why we think about it differently is because this is an idea that actually has become very much a part of us, which is that we all need to know the law. The question is, why is that going to be, you know, important? It can be important for a variety of reasons. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Isn't that what the couple
of
years ago was suggested by Stones put up in the whole thing that's out there? So it's when you first come into the land, anyone, including the Jews, but anyone coming in should know what's...
Yeah, I think that's... I'm so very glad that you raised that as an example. There's no question the idea of writing them up on stones where people can see it is to serve that purpose. It's striking because that, Moshe Greenberg will quote, is the kind of thing that we do have parallels of in ancient society. And it's almost like that's the, yes, that exists in other places too. And that's going to highlight the difference, how much further we go, even than other societies, in terms of trying to push that idea. Let's read a little bit further. Yeah.
So what we're really saying here, that we touch on, is that we're better, we're different or better than the nations of the world. Isn't that really what it's saying?
Well, the idea is that there is a particular chidush that Judaism was attempting to teach, and that was that it shouldn't just be the elite who know the teachings of the land and the nation, but that everybody should know it. We tend to think about, and this is the difference, just to kind of be clear, we think about Torah as like Ben Adam Lamakom, so we need to know it because... You know, in order to do what God asks us to do, we need to, which is part of the equation. But if you just think about it also socially, which I think is a good idea, like to kind of think about it like that, there is a chidush in saying that everybody needs to know the laws of the land. And what they'll point to in this conversation, you know, what do we all need to know out of Chumash? Like, if you had to pick Chumash. The thing that's most striking to every to scholars who pay attention to this, they'll say, okay, Breishit, should we know that? Yeah, I mean, that's our background. Shemot, Sarsa Dibros, that's fine. Vayikra. So also, like, why do you need to learn Vayikra? So again, obviously, we say, because it's sacred, it's Torah, obviously, we need to learn, I understand that now. But kind of going back, what's the idea of that? Especially because that's like priestly language, right? That's, and so... In classic societies, the people who are the priests who need to know the priestly stuff. Regular people don't need to know the priestly stuff. But we're commanded that everybody should learn it. And the question is why and what to make of it is part of what we have to pay attention to. Yeah. He does mention the idea of writing a Sefer Torah. I wanted to. He starts with this, and I actually wanted to bring this because I find that the term Amlachat Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh is actually kind of a term that's referred to in a lofty kind of way, but sometimes I feel like it's like I feel like I've referred to that phrase a lot of times without having any real meaning to it, other than saying you guys are great, you know, that type of thing. But what actually the phrase, this gives it a certain kind of very specific type of meaning. What it means to be a mamlechet kohanim is that you have to, every person is has the status of the elite. Every person has to have access to that knowledge. Every person is supposed to know. So now, what you're talking about in terms of the writing of the Torah, is that's an example of it. And that's kind of the point that I'd like to get to. That's an example. But what's the overarching, before we get the Torah, this is Perek Yutet and Sefer Shemot, before Matan Torah, so God says, Yom HaMelechet Kohanim Goy Kadosh. Why is that said there? What's its point? Its point is, I'm presenting you the Torah, and you're going to need to learn all of the Torah. Let's read how he describes the rest of it. He says, the Lord in each case is grounded in Israel's holiness. How do priests qualify for service? By learning and obeying the rules of their order. The same holds true for the folk priesthood of Israel. Folk priesthood, he means. The folk must learn regulations, hence they must all hear and understand them. That's the reason for the publication of the law. It is to function as a pedagogue, a trainer, in a course of life. The law is made public in Jewish society because everybody has to have access. Now he says, the publication of biblical law sets it apart from all other ancient legislation. Elsewhere in the ancient Near East, the collection of laws were designed to ensure justice and to demonstrate that the king had performed his duty to uphold justice. And the epilogue of Hammurabi is actually considered a very progressive in this regard, because he doesn't only hold on to the laws on his own, he actually, as it says, the epilogue of Hammurabi's code, the king invites any person who believes he has been wrong to come to the monument on which the laws are written and read his rights as the king stated them there. So Hammurabi says, I'm going to write these laws on a stone, and if you are concerned that you weren't treated properly, you can go and read the laws as they were described on the stone, and then you can make if you have a taina, then you can come and make a claim. Moshe Greenberg says, that's something similar to the publication of Israelite laws, but the similarity is remote and the invitation fictitious. How many people could read cuneiform? First of all, were people able to read? And this should also start turning the wheels in our own heads about Jewish literacy. I mean, this is statistically shown that literacy for the Jewish people was way above what it was in other societies, and that's directly related to the very strong push for Talmud Torah and the need to be able to study Torah. And then once you learn language, you learn other languages. That's like all part of the thing. But in the rest of the world, who could read? And how many people could enter the temple where the monument stood and understand what was written on it? Meaning, if you have something that's located in one place and it's written in a particular language, you can go there and kind of see it. If you're able to go and see it, then okay, that's like something. Greenberg says that's not exactly what it is that the Torah was after. So it is true that you see if you parse Yod Gadol that he wrote that on a stone, but that only serves to highlight what it is the Torah is actually trying to communicate, which is something much more powerful and penetrating than that. What's the benefit of having everybody know the law? Well, for one thing, they point to a checks and balances, and they like to quote this Sifra. Vayidaber Moshe el Aaron vel banav vel kol bnei Yisrael. So Moshe speaks to, this is Vayikra Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Kaf Dalet. Just by the Perek and the Sefer, Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Kaf Dalet, we're talking about, we've kind of gone through all of Sefer Vayikra, and kind of a large chunk. Moshe is going to teach this to Aaron, to the children, and to all of Bnei Yisrael. To which Rashi quotes the Sifra that says, "The Hazir Beit Din al Kohanim," that the Beit Din should keep an eye on the Kohanim. The Sifra actually says it a little bit further, more clearly. He says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe vel Aaron vel Bnei Yisrael, he's here at Aaron al Yedei Habanim. He warned Aaron via his children, Beit Habanim and his children al Yedei Yisrael via Bnei Yisrael, Beit Habanim ze al Yedei ze." The idea of the Sifra is, and if everybody knows the law, actually that creates a certain check on use of authority. Everybody's responsible to everybody else in a certain kind of way. If you think about kind of tyranny and oppression and things like that, that stems a lot from imbalance in terms of who has the power and who doesn't, who has the knowledge and who doesn't. And what this is basically saying is everybody's got to have the knowledge. Obviously, because we all need to know the laws we're going to follow, but also we're all going to be able to watch what's going on for other people as well, and keep an eye on each other. So that, and that checks and balances is something that's very clear in the Torah as well. The melech is appointed you know, by the Kohen and maybe by the Navi. There's kind of a lot of, you know, the four powers. There's a lot of checks and balances that's going on. One of the parts of checks and balances is making sure that we know all Torah and that we've learned it very well. With that as a backdrop, the idea of writing a Sefer Torah, what's the purpose of, why these two mitzvot then kind of written at the end of Chumash, what's its purpose? If you turn to the other side for a second. I'd like to focus on one aspect of each of these two mitzvot. If we are going to think about it like socially in that type of way, how does the Torah say that we are supposed to convey? How do people learn the Torah? Like, how's that supposed to happen? So the reason why we say Shema every day is Shema, as the family unit, is actually the key to transmitting Torah from one generation to another. I feel like when I'm saying these things, it's like kind of stating the obvious in a certain sense, but I actually think it's important to highlight them, because a lot of who we become as a society is because of these tzivuyim that generate a certain kind of society, you know, community that functions in a certain kind of way. The idea here is Mamlechet Kohanim. What does it mean to be Mamlechet Kohanim? Everybody needs to know the Torah. How are you going to make sure that everybody needs to know the Torah? Well, there are a couple of things that have to happen. One thing is, there is an oral transmission, and that's supposed to happen from parents to children. So when you say Shema, that's the most basic mechanism of communication. It's supposed to happen via the family. The Chumash ends with two other vehicles in which you're supposed to convey the Torah. And it's, if we think about it, there's an oral transmission that happens in Shema. The Chumash ends with one major scene, major communal scene, and one individual obligation. Hakel is a major communal scene, and the obligation to write a Torah is one individual, is an obligation on each individual. And between them, they're basically structuring that, in addition to kind of, you have your family unit that's teaching orally, or what we're concluding with is you have to make sure that everybody has the experience of what it is, you know, to experience the Torah, and also to have a Torah. You have to have a Torah in your house. I want to kind of shed light on two examples of the way that each of these, Hakel and writing Sefer Torah, have actually played out in, like via a vort of sorts, to play out how that's actually played out in terms of our own raising of our children. Yes?
Are you satisfied with the word le'ed b'nei Yisrael? Does that fit well in what you're saying?
Manti Eliyah Shirazot le'ed b'nei Yisrael, it should be a testament.
Maybe, I don't know.
Say
maybe
more.
It's good for, maybe it's not a good fit, I'm not sure.
What do you think? What's your thought in raising it?
Originally, when I think of aid is more distant, singular person gives a witness. The purpose of writing the Torah is what you need to live it. In order for you to be a leftist Kohen, you need to absorb it.
Yeah.
And aid is...
but what's the
outside coming in?
So it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting you're raising it. Let's deal with that one first. Let's talk about writing the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah. So I'm going to do the number three on slide two first. So what's the mitzvah of the writing of a Sefer Torah? So there's actually famous Minchas Chinuch that raised the question of whether the mitzvah to write a Torah or own a Torah. He has a whole deal there. I don't know if you thought anything about that. You have a reaction about whether the mitzvah is to write a Torah or to have a Torah? Or what might be a nafka mina between those two?
If you
inherit one. So the Gemara actually says, and it seems to, like, you'd think it settles the question, the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that if you inherit a Torah, you still have to write a Torah. You still have an obligation to write a Torah. So what does that suggest? That the mitzvah is actually to write the Torah, not just to have a Torah, which you'll say it kind of shifts the nature of the mitzvah. Like, the idea of having a Torah is, well, you should have a Torah so you can learn it. If the idea is to learn the Torah, so if I have a Torah, I have to write a Torah. If the mitzvah is to dafka write a Torah, then it sounds like there's something else, which I should have the kind of the experience of writing the letters or something like that. So that makes the Sefer HaChinuch, the Minchas HaChinuch, suggests the mitzvah is to write write a Torah from inheritance. There's also a Gemara that says that if you buy a Torah, Gemara Menachos says if you buy a Torah in the Shuk, it's kechotef mitzvah min ha-shuk. It's like you are snatching a mitzvah from the marketplace. So what does that mean, that it's like snatching a mitzvah from the marketplace? So some say from there, clearly it's like, that's not the way to do the mitzvah. You're like snatching a mitzvah from the marketplace. That's not a real mitzvah, and therefore that shows that the mitzvah is to write it, not just to have it. There are others who suggest, Rashi actually says not like that. He says like you kind of grabbed an opportunity to achieve the mitzvah. That's, but at any rate, there's this kind of debate about whether the mitzvah is to write it or to own it. And the Rambam's language, when the Rosh quotes it, Rosh quotes the Rambam, support the source, says, Kachas HaRamzal, the mitzvah sasehi l'kol ish Yisrael l'chtov sefer Torah l'atzmo. The Rambam actually expresses it as, there's a mitzvah to write a sefer Torah. There are those who point out that in the accurate language of the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, he actually writes it in Arabic, but the translation to Hebrew is Sheyihiyah l'chol Yisrael sefer Torah. Every Jew should have a sefer Torah. It's actually, even they're not clear whether the mitzvah is to write it or to have it. And he quotes the pasuk Shneimar v'ata kitvu lachem et hashira zot. Klomar kitvu lachem sefer Torah sheyesh pashira. L'fisha'ein kosvin ha-Torah parshiyot parshiyot. This is a famous shita of the Rambam that's hard to understand, that deserves its own explanation. The Rambam actually understands that the word kitvu lachem et hashira, what does it mean, kitvu lachem et hashira hazot? Write this shira. So what's the shira? Literally, like when we've actually glossed over it in our learning here so far, because we didn't pay attention to it. We said, Kitvulchem et Hashira. So what's the Shira? The Torah. Actually, Pshat, it doesn't sound like that. What would Kitvulchem et Hashira mean? Hazinu. And then, so if it's Hazinu, then how do we get to writing? So the Rambam actually formulates, he's very concerned about the Rambam, in terms of his Parshanut in Chumash, is always very concerned about making sure that the mitzvah is explained. The only way a mitzvah can be called midoraisa is if it's actually written in the Torah. Anything that's like two Torah Shebaal Peh like is not Torah Shebichtav, according to the Rambam. It can't be like, well, that's the oral interpretation of it. So the Rambam is very makbid. And so it bothers him, actually, api shitato, kitvu lachem et hashira, doesn't sound like you should write the Torah. So some people go loose on it. Shira, you know, the whole Torah is a song. But the Rambam actually gives his own odd formulation, which is the mitzvah is to write ha'azinu. That's the mitzvah. What's the problem? You're not allowed to write only one parsha of the Torah, because you're not allowed to write parshiot. So he says, this is how Rambam writes it, v'fisha'in kosvin ha'Torah parshiot, therefore you have to write the whole Torah. So that's the shita of the Rambam. What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to write shirat ha'azinu. How do you fulfill the mitzvah? By writing a whole Torah, because that's the only way they can write Shirat Ta'azinu. That actually helps Howie's question a lot, because why is it Le'ed B'nai Yisrael? Because Hazinu HaShemayim V'Ader Tishmar Yitzim Refi, what's Hazinu about? You're basically writing about the relationship between God in the Torah. That changes the mitzvah very much, in that it's like about the covenant between B'nai Yisrael and God, but less about the learning that B'nai Yisrael should do via the Torah. That is the Rambam Shita. But the Rosh has a famous different sheet when it comes to writing a Torah, and he says, "Zehu b'doros harishonim." This was in earlier generations. Shehu kotvim sifrei Torah v'lomdim bo. The mitzvah of writing a sefer Torah, he says, is about writing a sefer Torah, and that to learn from it. And the mitzvah to write a sefer Torah, to learn from it, was the form that it took when people actually learned from sifrei Torah. But today you write a Torah and you leave it in shul. Likros bo barabim. They use that for laning. So he says, mitzvah sasehi al kol ish miYisrael asher yodo maseges. Anybody who is able, he is responsible to write heichum shei haTorah uMishnah uGemara uPeirushim lahagot behem hu banav. What's the mitzvah according to the Rosh? The mitzvah is not to write a sefer Torah. The mitzvah is to write svarim. And the reason why the mitzvah is to write svarim is so that you'll have svarim available for you to learn. Ki mitzvah ksivas ha-Torah hi lilmod ba ki dechtiv lamda b'nei Yisrael sima v'pihem. Teach it to b'nei Yisrael, place it in their mouths. V'yidei ha-gemara v'ha-peirushim yedah peirush ha-mitzvot v'adinim al-buryam. By having svarim in your house, then you'll know the halacha. L'chein heim heim ha-svarim sh'adam tzuvel l'kadvam. And then he says in the end, based on a Gemara, v'gam lo l'machram im lo l'mod Torah v'lisa isha. You know how you're not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah? You're not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah. The only way you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah is if the yeshiva is going to close otherwise, so it's, you sell a Torah in order to have more Talmud Torah. Or you can sell a Torah for Hachnasas Kala, you're allowed to sell a Torah, but others are not allowed to sell a Torah. The Rosh actually says, different than the Rambam. Rambam says the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah is the mitzvah to write Hazinu. You got to write a whole Torah. The Rosh says the mitzvah to write a Torah is in order to learn, and then if you don't learn from Sefer Torah, you fulfill the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah by writing or buying, depending on if it's to write or to own, Sfarim. And so he says, therefore, he thinks actually you're not supposed to sell Sfarim. Actually, you're not supposed to sell your Sfarim. You got to keep holding on to your Sfarim. Because you should, they're supposed to fill your house, essentially, as we'll see in Sefer HaChinuch. Yeah.
Is the point of this teaching how one learns? It's unveiled, it's experiential unveiled.
Because of the writing part, you mean?
Yeah, that when you're writing it, you're actually involved in the actual doing. So you're remembering it in a different way, it seems.
Kinesthetic. It's like, yeah, right. I mean, it resonates a lot. I don't see Rishonim, you know, I haven't seen it formulated in that kind of way. I think that with all of these, you have two questions. You have like, is the mitzvah to write it or to have it? And then what's the purpose of the mitzvah in either writing it or having it? So they're kind of two sets of questions. So even the Rush could say the mitzvah is to have it, not necessarily to write it, and this is the reason. Or it could be like there's a mitzvah to write it, and this is the reason. So if you line up all the questions, the answers in a certain way, it would make sense, which is you're supposed to write it in order to have it, and that's like a kinesthetic, you know, type of experience. But this turns out to be a very, you know, important machlok between the Rambam and the Rush. And the Rush is considered, on the one hand, like a kind of a brazen type of shita, like the Torah says, write a Torah. The Rush says, you can buy Sfarim or write Sfarim, and that's good enough. But that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch as being a real halacha. And here the Sefer HaChinuch actually describes it in very... I brought it because I think it's like really nice to see the way that this ends up shaping our, you know, our homes. Sefer HaChinuch says, "Bisharshei ha-mitzvah, lafi sheyadua b'bnei adam sheim osim kol divrei mufi ha-chana nimtzeit lahem." People do things based... The more they prepare for it, this is similar to... The more they prepare, the more they invest in it, the more meaningful the mitzvah is. V'alkein tzivanu baruch hu liyot l'kol achad v'chai b'nei Yisrael Sefer Torah muchan etzlo, except that he then says it in an having kind of way. Therefore, everybody should have available for himself a Sefer Torah shiuchal quote bo tamid v'olitztarech l'lechad achrav l'beit chaveros, so that you don't have to go to your friend's house. You shouldn't have to go any place for a Sefer. You should just have it with you. L'mani yilmad li'rat Hashem v'yedav yaskil v'mitzotav v'yikarot v'achamudot nizav v'pazra. So you'll have all the Sfarim, you'll learn what it means to be Yirei Shamayim. V'nitztaveinu l'shtadel b'zeh kol echad v'echad v'nei Yisrael. We're obligated, every Jewish person is obligated to have Sfarim. V'av b'shenichu l'avotav, even if you get it b'Yerusha. Meaning he's taking those Gemaras and applying it to Sfarim. Like he said, if you inherit a Sefer Torah, you have to write a Sefer Torah. According to the Rush, that doesn't mean a Sefer Torah only, it means Sfarim today. Therefore, he says, even if you inherit a library, you're supposed to buy your own Sfarim. L'man yirba Sfarim beinenu, so that there'll be a lot of Sfarim, Jews will have a lot of Sfarim. V'nuchal hashil mehem, asher lo tasigi edol l'knot. So people will be able to lend each other books. Like people don't have, you'll be able to lend somebody else a book. You see, the Sefer HaChinuch is actually very much concretizing the way in which this mitzvah is supposed to kind of set up, like, what does a Jewish house look like? So, like, you know, what does a Jewish house look like? There's Sfarim, and, you know, it's supposed to have Sfarim in the house. V'gam l'man yikru b'Sfarim chadashim l'kol echad v'echad mi'Yisrael. So people should have new Sfarim. Pen takutz nafsham b'karam b'Sfarim ha'yishanim she'inichu lem avotem. It's actually very interesting. Sefer HaChinuch says, you know, so why can't you have old Sfarim? Because you might not like learning from old Sfarim. It's nice to have new Sfarim. You like having new Sfarim. That's why the mitzvah is to write Sfarim or buy Sfarim of your own. V'dabini, you know that Sefer HaChinuch is writing for his son. He says, Sha'af ha'pish yikar achiv daraisa interact Sefer HaTorah. Even though I think the mitzvah daraisa, like the Rambam, is only with a real Sefer Torah. Ein safek shegam b'shar Sfarim shenitchabru al pirush ha'Torah yesh l'kol achat la'asot mehem k'fi ha'yechol mitamim she'amarani. You should do the same with Sfarim, not just with the Sefer Torah. The last sentence: V'zeu derech kol anshei ma'ala yirei Elokim asher hayu lefaneinu l'kbo midrash b'beitam l'sofrim l'chtov sfarim rabim kibirkat Hashem shenatan lehem. That's why it is our practice that we write lots of Sfarim and have lots of Sfarim. When I saw that, I actually thought that the aid l'bnei Yisrael in the pasuk felt very much like when you go into your house, testifies to the relationship that you have when you have Sfarim actually in your house. I just find it meaningful that we know what exists in our, you know, Jews have homes and they have books in Jewish homes and there's Sfarim hopefully in Jewish homes. That's a thing. How did that happen? So what I think is very powerful and a strong kind of argument over the course of thousands of years is that there was a democratizing, you know, as the Torah came, the Chiddush says, everybody's got to know the law. Like, it can't be. It's not like what's happening in other places. For Jews, the reason why Jews are kind of a people of the book is there were other nations. God said, you're going to be a Mamlech HaKohanim. What it means to be a Mamlech HaKohanim is everybody's got to know the law. What does that mean? It means that everybody's got to write the law and have it in their house and buy it, and it should be new, so people are going to appreciate reading it and learning it. And that makes sense to be the last mitzvah in Chumash. The next last mitzvah in Chumash, this is kind of in the spirit of a Bort that makes the point. So the mitzvah of Hakel is a different mechanism of conveying the centrality of Talmud Torah and having it available to everyone. Because the mitzvah of Hakel happens less often, but it's an enormous scene. And I want to just focus on, the pasuk says, unusually, Hakel, right? Who is obligated in the mitzvah of Hakel? Anashim, Nashim, Betaf. Now, that's important because we know that, when the Gemara lists the mitzvah, Nashim are Pturot from Talmud Torah. Nashim are Chayavot in Hakel. Taf, presumably, are Pturot from Talmud Torah, Pturim from mitzvah in general, but they're Chayav in Hakel. So what's different here? What's that mitzvah about? So I'll start with just noting that who are the Ramban says al pi pshat. Who's the taf? The Ramban says it's not a question that al pi pshat, the taf, are people, kids who are old enough to learn. Because what's the purpose of Hakel? He's supposed to learn. So who should learn? Anybody who can appreciate the learning. But he says, despite the fact that it seems obvious that that's pshat, Chazal didn't understand it that way. Chazal understood that it's even younger, kids who aren't able to learn. What's he referring to? And he quotes this Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Gimel. Gemara in Chagiga says, Tana Rabbanan, Masir Rabbi Yochanan ben Brok of Rabbi Lozer ben Chisma Shehokul Hakul Pnei Rabbi Yeshua b'Pekiyin. These two rabbis went to meet Rabbi Yeshua and Pekiyin. Amar Lehem, Ma Chidush Hayo Beis Midrash Hayo. What's the Chidush that you learn in the Beis Midrash? Amar Lo, Hamidecha Anu Meimecha Anu Shosim. He said, well, you're asking us? You're the Rebbe. We came to see you. We want to hear your Torah. Amar Lehem, he said to them, Afal Picheid, Yeshua Beis Medrash Bel Chiddush. He says, I appreciate that, but I want to hear what was the shear that was given. And historically, this is important because Rabbi Yeshua, this is after Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel got into a spat around Chiddush HaChodesh. And so, you know, who was actually operating, functioning as Nasi that Shabbos? He asks, Shabbos Rabbi Lozer Ben Azariah Haise, it was his week. V'meh Haise Agadah Yom. So what did he know? What did he give shir? What did he say that week? Amulah Pashas Hakel. It's given shir on Hakel. Mad Darash Ba Hakel Sam Hanashim Hanashim Ba'Taf. And his shir was, his drash was Imanashim Ba'im Lil Mode. So the men come to learn because they're Chayim Talmud Torah. Nashim Ba'o Lishmoa. The women come in order to hear. Taf Lama Ba'id. What are the taf? What do the children come for? They Litain Tzchar L'Mivyehim. In order to give tzchar to those who bring and to bring them the kids. Not clear exactly what that means, but apparently it moved Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Yeshua said, Amar Lehem, Margalit Tova Haita Biadchem, you had a great pearl that you were holding on to, Bikashtim Labdami Meni, and you almost made me, you held it back, you almost made me miss out on that. Meshech Chachma says, nice idea, but what's the idea? Exactly, what's the... So this is the way that the Meshech Chachma remembers. Reminds Meshech Chachma of the Yerushalmi in Yevamos. The Yerushalmi in Yevamos says, the third source, they make a comment about Rabbi Yoshua, who is the rabbi in the story. Rabbi Yoshua the kara alav et mi yored daya. When they would see Rabbi Yoshua, they would say about him, et mi yored daya, who will teach the law? Meaning, who knows more than Rabbi Yoshua, the great Talmud Chacham? Zechorani, and they would say that they remembered Shaita imo molechet arisato lebeit hakneset, that his mother would bring him in his crib, in his basket, in his carriage, b'shvil sheyitabku aznav b'divrei Torah, so that he should hear words of Torah already as a child. So the Meshech Chachma says that what Rabbi Yoshua said when he heard that vort was the reason why he was such a Margalit Tova is because it gave meaning to his mother's practice. And that's what did his mother do, bring to shul when he was an infant, so that he would be able to hear the words of Torah. When he heard that vort, he basically said this drash of Lozabar Asari, he said, oh, that's the Kiv of Hakil. That's exactly what the idea was. Who comes to Hakil? And Hashim and Hashim Atach, why? It's not about the content, it's about the experience. And the experience of Hakil should be true even for those who are very young. Tosfot on the Gemara and Chagiga says, that's why there's a minhag that young children go to shul. So when people complain about where the kids should be in shul, they talk more, they talk less. The argument is that's what Hakel was about. Tosfos says that. The story about Rav Elazar ben Azariah, you know, that Rabbi Yeshua was exactly that, that when kids have an opportunity to be in shul, have it as part of shul. So if you look at Hakel and the way that that plays out, and you look at the mitzvah of writing Sefer Torah, the way that that plays out, essentially the idea of making it so that everybody needs to know the law, everybody needs to know the Torah, has actually shaped very concrete practices in our homes and our shuls. Kids go to shul, they svarim in our houses. Those are manifestations, actually, the last two mitzvahs of the Torah, which come together in Parshas Vayelech in order to communicate the fact that that's something that's supposed to shape the way we establish Jewish learned homes. Thanks. Shabbat shalom.
Thanks, Colin.